What's the point of having a nice bag set up when you have a child's drill from a playset? You should put a kid's toy in there.
Yeah.
Like a one of those squeaky hammers. It's like,
yeah. Yeah. Okay, part three. Here we go. Nail polish are for people who mess up all the time. Best thing you can do is chuck it in the garbage and get yourself a wedge.
A wedge?
A wedge.
Yikes, disgusting. Go to Walmart. All you have to do is say hi. Welcome to Walmart. Leave the trade.
Welcome to another episode of Efficient by Design podcast. We're doing something a little bit different today. We might start a mini series or a series that we might start doing on a regular basis. At this point, we're going to call it Comments on Comments. And what we're going to do is actually go through comments that I have received on social media posts and talk about them. So if you come up with a better name for this series, then message that to us in the comment section and we'll see if we can better that. But it's not bad.
Hey, Dustin, what was yours again?
Well, it's kind of lame now that you make me say it out loud.
What was it like? Try to comment.
No. No, it was constructive criticism because we're construction.
Right.
Yeah, so that's kind of. I thought it was weak when you said it the first time.
Well, he asked for one that was a play on words.
Yeah.
And we were saying, well, this is supposed to be constructive criticism. And sure. I thought, well, what a construction. Yeah. There's a play.
Yeah. Concrete comments.
Concrete.
Okay, so let's get back on track. If you have something better than those, which I'm sure you do, then comment about it. So this is basically a discussion around terrible comments is kind of where this came from.
But
so a few days ago.
You got to define what a terrible comment is and what a good comment is.
Okay. Well, let's define what my personal feeling of what social media is supposed to be, maybe.
What you think it should be. Yeah.
What I think it should be. You know, it should be discussion. In my opinion, it should be hopefully relatively respectful discussion where people discuss different points of view, share experience and knowledge, and it's like this a community sort of situation. But of course, what happens oftentimes is that people on the safety of the other side of the screen behind a keyboard will just offer up their two bits from the feeling of safety that you would never or very rarely ever do face-to-face with somebody. And they'll say incredibly judgmental, rude, asinine things because there's no repercussion. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, I'll even try to comment back to like, just kind of stand my ground or to invite a discussion. And they don't even receive comments. They've actually got comments blocked. So they have a private account, comments are blocked, and they just say the most cutting, awful things that they can come up with. And you're left, you know, on my side of things, I've got a large following dealing with like all of these awful things that are said. Now, to put that in context, I receive far more positive interaction than negative, for sure. But with the size of the following and the posts that kind of go viral, the ones that go viral are the ones that people come out of the woodwork and just say all kinds of awful things. And so like I probably spent from about 4:30 till 6:30 this morning kind of acquiring compiling a bunch of comments that were like really negative.
With a box of tissues?
Yeah. It is brutal. And the stuff that I picked is like the PG stuff. There is some terrible, terrible, awful things that have been said. It's incredible the comfort that people have to say ridiculous things. So I read through a whole pile of comments and copy and pasted a bunch out. And so what I'm going to do, I've basically got like a little header on my note that I will give a description to the post it's in relation to. I'll verbally describe the post and we'll see if we can actually in editing, put a little video clip alongside this. So you can actually see the video that is the post that we're referring to. And then Brad and Dustin are going to basically be assholes and read a comment in relation to it, basically with the kind of theme that they suggested.
Yeah, and what we're reading is a real comment by a follower.
Yeah.
And so we are basically pretending to be said follower.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And we don't know who they are.
No.
No. And we're not going to mention them, but you could probably go back into that particular post and find them. mm-hmm. and then have a discussion.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting other. That I know early on when you were posting certain things and someone would say some stupid comment, there were sometimes where you kind of like almost knew that people were going to back you up on it and you wouldn't even have to do anything. And then all these other people would kind of come to the aid and they would destroy the guy and you wouldn't really have to do anything. You couldn't just sit back and just kind of like watch. Yeah. Is that a fun thing to watch or is For it sure. stressful or is it like a...
No, that's super nice. I mean, and that's the case most of the time, that when someone says something totally ridiculous, that the rest of the audience and the followers will kind of give defense to my perspective or set that person back on a reasonable course. And oftentimes there'll be like a very long discussion where someone's getting torn apart and they sure. just delete their comment and the whole discussion disappears.
Okay.
So those things happen. And to be fair too, like I block very, very few people. Like I've maybe blocked 15 to 20 people in total mm-hmm. over the last 5 years. And those are things where there's something like super racist or super derogatory, something really gross mm-hmm. that's said, or someone that just won't engage in discussion in a way that's in any way positive. Mm-hmm. They're just being completely insulting. And I'm trying to invite discussion. Let's actually have a discussion, talk about this. You have a different perspective and point of view. Great. Mm. Let's talk about that. Versus just being yeah. like, you are a terrible person. You don't know what you're doing. You obviously have no clue. You've never yeah. been on the, like all those things. You're like, okay, this is going nowhere.
So to the people that don't necessarily comment, because some people might just be listening to podcasts and be watching this on YouTube, but they're not a big social media person. I don't have social media. So the fact that you can actually control who comments, you can delete someone, can you delete a conversation? Like just mm-hmm. explain that for a second to those of us sure. that don't.
So yeah, basically I have the control that I can delete a comment
yeah.
if I want to, and I can block somebody if I want to. And that's, yeah, that's within my ability to do. And again, that's, both those things are super rare occurrences, mm. but people have the ability to comment on whatever they want. I have commenting turned on. So that's something I could actually turn commenting off mm. and not allow people to even say anything. And then people again can have a private account and they can actually not allow comments to come back to them, which is funny because we actually get quite regularly, I'll get questions in posts that are valid, good questions. Mm. I go to answer and I write up a response to whatever the question is and then it bounces back like, oh, they don't receive comments. Mm. Like, what are you asking the question for? They maybe didn't yeah. know how to set it up when they mm. set up the account mm. or something. But it's funny how often that happens. Mm. Yeah, and coming from, you know, the reality of my situation, coming from in the trades and having done no social media until 5 years ago, and then now this being a very real big part of the business, you know, I've had to kind of learn that. And the first few like kind of cutting comments, they hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, you take them personally. Like if someone were to talk to me like this in person, I'd be like, really? Wow, that's mm-hmm. brutal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so you take some of those and then you kind of like, okay, I got some thick skin. I mean, as a tradesman, you're used to, you know, coarse talk and angry people and frustration. And like, I'm no stranger to any of that. And to a degree, intentionally, I do care what people think. I've never wanted to be somebody who is just like on the outside, you know, living in my own world, don't care what people think, it doesn't matter. Like I actually do care because I don't think of myself as I'm a perfect version of who I am. I need to learn and change and grow. And that happens primarily through other people's response to me and my personal introspection. So when I hear something that's potentially a bit critical, I try to take stock of it. Okay, is there some truth in there? Do I have something I need to pay attention to? You know, and if there is, great, let's take stock of that. And then the stuff that maybe is not beneficial or helpful, then let it roll off my back and forget about it. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. So that's something that I try to do. And I also have a unique situation in social media in that I'm not, like in the beginning, I was kind of more like influencer in the sense that I was showing a lot of on the job site tricks and skills and methods and different things. And then as a tool belt company developed more and more, then we had like a product that we're selling. So now I've got posts where we're like showing product and I'm trying to show work content and pass on knowledge to the industry and to other people and be helpful, show helpful tips and tricks. And here's how our bags work. And here's the experience that backs it up. And so I'm in this weird place where I'm like, I'm not just a business trying to sell a product. I'm also have work experience. I want to pass on helpful tips and tricks and knowledge. And that's not to say that I'd have it all figured out. I'm the mm-hmm. be-all, end-all, you know, authority on any of it. But if there's things that I feel might be helpful, I'll share them. And sometimes you share something and people think it's totally stupid and useless, and you get a bunch of negative comments, and you get a handful of comments where it's like, that's, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
That's helpful. Thank you. And everything in between. And the posts that end up going viral are the ones that you get so many negative comments. But along with those, there's, you know, 10 times as many positive ones mm-hmm. most of the time too. Okay. So there's kind of a preface of what we're going to be talking about and what we're going through. So let's maybe jump into it. So the first one, was in regards to a recent post where there's a video from when I was framing, and I showed an option to adjust the truss, to move a truss, a stubborn truss over, when I was nailing sheathing onto the roof. So what I did in the video is there's the sheathing, I'm on the roof, and I take my nail puller, which is nice, thin, slender tip on it, and the truss is being stubborn. I got to move it over a bit to get it to my layout. So I just punch my nail puller through the plywood, and I made a hole that's 3/4 inches long, 1/4 inch wide. So the tip goes through the plywood, and then I can actually pry on the truss that's under the plywood and push it over and set the nail.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a little bit of a disclaimer as to why I did that in that situation. Because in the original post I did a few years ago, I actually even said, this is a little bit overkill in this scenario, but for the sake of showing this little method, I'm going to show it. And in that situation when I was building, there was actually blocking under the sheathing that was holding my spacing. The trusses had been sitting in a bit of a warped pile on the ground, so they had some movement to them. So all of that to say, the truss had to move about 3/8 of an inch. And typically I would just stand on the plywood, hit it with my hammer, push it over, nail it. There's all kinds of ways you can manipulate trusses around to get them to lay out. So whether you're pushing by hand or you're pulling on it or you got your knee butted into it, all kinds of ways it can be done. Fine. Well, it was particularly stubborn. Oh, this is an opportunity. I can show this one little trick, and I can punch my nail bar through, pry it over, nail it. Well, the comments to that were outrageous. So I'm only got one here. We can talk about some other ones, but one of you guys have got to read this comment now. And
okay, Dustin, why don't you take the first one?
The guy on the other side of the screen.
Okay, I haven't really read this so beforehand, so we're just going for it. So the comment is this: yikes, disgusting. Go to Walmart. All you have to do is say hi. Welcome to Walmart. If this is your answer to moving a truss 1/4 inch, I feel so sorry for the owners on other shit you pull. Leave the trade.
That's awesome. It's awesome. So I was like, wow, that's really creative. Really creative. Well done to think outside the box. Because I mean, of course, you know, I'm punching holes through plywood, and people figure like, well, he probably does this all the time. There's probably holes all over his roof and it's structurally completely ruined. And I'm like, no, this is like one of maybe 2 times on that job that I did that. And so it's, you know, 6 inches down from the edge of the sheet, I've got this tiny little hole. If you don't want to do it, fine. I'm not telling everybody this is the way. Here's one option. And I actually use that method oftentimes to pray more often when I am, once I've sheeted a floor and I have to adjust the rim board. So what we do on our floors is we get our floor joists all down, sheet the floor, snap all of our lines at the edges to make sure we cut our plywood to perfect dimensions. And if there's some little discrepancies in the rim board, then we bump the rim board in and out to flush it up to our sheathing. Well, if you've got a foundation and you've got rim board running parallel with your joists, and you cut your plywood off and the rim board is inside your plywood, say by 1/2 inch, well, in order to pull that rim board out to flush up the plywood, you got a few options. You can set a screw on from the outside, use a nail puller and pull it out. You can have somebody down below to like knock it out, knock the rim board out to dimension from below. Or what I started doing oftentimes, take my nail bar, come in an 1.5 inches, the rim board is usually 1.25 inches, drive my nail bar through the plywood a bit, pry it from on top, nail it. Well, that hole gets covered with the bottom plate of the wall, no structural issue, it's quick, works great.
So the water would just leak through there.
So this comment, again, in art, people apply their building practice, materials, and everything to anything that I post, mm-hmm. which is unfair because obviously I'm building in a different climate, different building code, different materials.
But it does make sense because we only perceive based on our bubble.
Exactly. Exactly. And so many of the comments are, that's the issue with them.
Yeah.
They're said from this narrow-minded their narrow-minded perspective, and they don't look at the bigger picture. And the thing is, okay, it's not something that you would do. Fine, that's great. Either scroll on or ask a question. See that? Oh, that's interesting. I don't think I feel comfortable with that. You know, you could. I even said too, like, you know, call me a hack if you want. Mm-hmm. So I invited it, and I knew it when I posted it too. I'm like, here's another funny thing about doing posts. You know, the ones that usually are the most appealing are quite short. You don't give a whole bunch of disclaimer. You just like put it out there and let it fly. Well, then I have in the past done some posts like that. And then in the description, I've written a big disclaimer. I'm like, okay, here's like all of the unsaid things. Mm-hmm. Here's my location. Here's the process. Here's the practice. And you write out this great big description about the why and the context and all of the stuff.
But nobody's going to read that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The people that say the most awful things don't read a word. Mm. They just see it like, oh, and they say something outrageous. And so that was one when I posted. I'm like, you know what? I'm tired of giving all disclaimers. I'm going to keep it short and sweet. I'm going to post it. I'm going to get a ton of negative comment. And it's somewhat validated.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I'm punching a hole in sheathing. And some guys are like, you know, there's the most ideal spot. Obviously, it's going to rot there first. I'm like, what? Rot? Mm-hmm. This is not the only gap in the roof. Like the sheets have to be spaced apart with H clips. Like that comment makes no sense whatsoever. And then guys are talking about, yeah, you should be using a bar clamp to pull your trusses to dimension. Like who's carrying around a bar clamp on the roof to pull their trusses to dimension? You should be using ridge blocks. There are ridge blocks all over the place. This is between that span. You should have a 2x4. There's always lumber around to crank. You know what? I'm not going to yell for my buddy on the floor to go grab me a 2x4, hike it over to me, pass it up. I could be done in 5 seconds. Like that's not always the right way.
Yeah.
Those aren't wrong things. Those aren't things I have not done before. If it's got to move a lot, piece of lumber in there from below with a 14 footer and torque on it, move it over. Sure.
But the other thing is as a framer, you're very used to doing all your work as hard as you can, as true as you can. And then as you're wrapping up and cleaning up, there's guys behind you cutting it all apart. Mm-hmm. So, or if it's raining, like how many times did we punch holes in plywood so that the water could drain out? Because you don't want the plywood swelling like crazy.
Exactly.
So you want the water to drain. So the idea of criticizing one like micro instance that you're kind of just zoomed in on and not interested about any of the context around, that's a pretty good little life lesson there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't do that.
And you can understand how someone that does make these stupid comments, if they don't really care, if they're the type of people that just don't care, like how fun would it be just to sit there and just troll all over the place and make the dumbest comments and whatever. Like if you didn't care and you had no, like, I don't know.
Conscience.
What a wicked fun thing. Just telling everybody how awesome you are and how stupid they are.
It makes me think of the real world equivalent. So say, you know, you work in a totally different climate, different culture, and you get flown in to work at a job. And you drop in and you put your pouch on and you immediately start hollering at everybody around you. You don't even know what the plans say. You don't know what the job is. You don't know what the climate's like or what the culture is. And you just start pointing at the boss, yelling nonsense. You'd immediately be sent home.
Yeah.
So, but in this situation, we're fine with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
What's your next one?
Okay, so next one is, we've got this one, tack strip nail set. So this is a situation where I was prepping in my basement at my house for the carpet installer to come in. So I'm gonna do what I can to help this guy out. So I'll get things all prepped. I got my baseboard in already and I'll go around and I'll set all the smooth edge tack strip. There's different names for it, but it's basically this 3/4 inch wide by about 1/4 inch thick wooden strips. They're 4 feet long. They've got all these tiny little pin nails that are angled back towards the wall. And you fasten them to the floor, and then the carpet installer comes in and he stretches the carpet out and kicks it under the baseboard and it locks into that nail strip. And now I've seen carpet installers install smooth edge with a hammer that's got a really small head on it. And you're driving these little tiny concrete nails into concrete. And typically anytime you're hand driving nails into concrete, they take like a couple good hard shots and then you'd leave them. Mm-hmm. If you overhit them, they depress down in, they bounce loose, they don't bite. So they take practice. They're hard to hit. And the tack strip, you know, these nails are preset amongst all these little pins. So it's a very small little area that you have to hit. So it's a difficult thing to do, to just take a hammer and drive those things home without any assistance.
And you're surrounded by peril with all the sharp little points sticking out.
Sharp little points. And you're also close to baseboard. Yeah. So like the potential is you don't hit it square enough. The nail bends over and then you chip the concrete and there's a lump and you've done no good except damage things. You clip the baseboard and smash that apart. Like it's a tricky, hard little thing to do.
Yeah.
And I pride myself in being good at driving nails, but that's a specific technique and talent, which I'm like, I'm not that good at that. Mm. That's hard to do. Mm-hmm. And I've seen guys do it, like, holy cow, they got a little claw hammer and then it's like two hard shots and they just nail that little nail. And it's right close to the wall, no damage. It's really impressive. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do some help. So I talked to the carpet installer, how far do you want me to put the tack strip off the wall? And he says, yeah, give me whatever, an inch or whatever off the baseboard. And so I go by his recommendations, ton of comments about being too far away. And I'm thinking, okay, and do this easily. I've actually got an old nail puller that I had milled down into a little hammer for nailing a chamfer strip inside forms. And it's in a drawer in my garage. I'm like, that would be perfect. It's got like a 3/4 inch little head on it. It's got a, you know, 2 inch kind of head size, and there's an arm sticking back for the nail puller end. I can use that, set the nail, and use my framing hammer, a couple of good hard shots. Worked great. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. Boom, boom, set. Oh, this is great. Lay it down. So, you know, it's quick. I'm working within my own skill and ability, and I'm going by the recommendation of the carpet installer as far as the distance from the wall. So with that in mind, you guys can read these comments. There's a few more on this one.
Okay. Looks like there's four comments. Well, maybe Dustin, we can take turns. I'll go first. Mm-hmm. Just so we don't leave the Aussies out, they feel sad. I'm going to give it my best go here. Miles too far away from the scooting board. Plus, just use a bloody hammer.
Mm-hmm. You were using a hammer.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm not, I'm using, you know, this little assistance of this nail bar that I'd made. So lots of comments about it being too far away. I'm like, whatever, people. Some guys commented, no, it's fine. And it's always back and forth. And again, I've written down four comments here. I think this post had like 300 or 400 comments.
Okay.
There's a ton of comments. And yeah, a lot of them just use a hammer, and so many insults about how a real tradesman would feel like hit the nails and it's too far away.
Okay,
go ahead, Dust.
Sad. It takes 3 hits. You're fired.
So I get fired. I get fired in my posts all the time.
You're fired, yeah.
Fired. Yeah, if a guy in my side did that, fired. If you did that, you're fired. I would never hire you, like, all the time. I've been fired so many times.
If you had to go work for these guys, you would be fired.
Yeah.
Next way, what one here says, pounding away into a plywood floor. I could be wrong, but a concrete slab doesn't bounce or shake when hit with a hammer. Watch the camera jump. But if you say so.
So this one, I was like, no questions, just assumption and judgment. And so I responded back. I was like, no, this is the concrete slab in my basement of my house, which is built in the 70s. And I filmed doing the work myself. And that comment was in the middle. And then he responds back and is like, no, if you say so, and the camera wouldn't bounce. I'm like, what are you talking about? The camera wouldn't bounce. Go into an older house that's got semi-fractured slab, set your phone on the concrete slab and hit the slab with a hammer 2 feet away.
Yeah.
There's vibration that happens.
Yeah.
So he just leaned in, like, thought I was lying about it. No, this plywood.
To what end would you say it's a concrete slab when it's actually plywood? What's the win for you?
There was several comments about how pathetic it was that I needed to do that and hit so hard to drive nails into plywood. Again, you're just like, I don't even know what to say. So oftentimes these comments too that are so outrageous, I put a couple of laugh faces at them and respond back. I'm like, I don't even know what to say.
I'm
just going to laugh about it. You're entitled to your opinion, and fine, I'll move on.
That's the last one.
Because you suck at using a hammer, probably suck at laying carpet too.
It's so good. Like, and I'm not going to lay the carpet. I've tried that a little bit. It's a hard thing to do.
And you don't claim to be a carpet installer.
No, never said that. So yeah, what people kind of thread in between the lines and assume.
Yeah.
It is like, okay, let's put this guy in this box and I'm going to be as much of a jerk as possible.
Yeah. You're a carpenter, not a carpenter. Yep. Do you get it? Dustin doesn't get it.
I don't get it.
So here's the question though.
Yeah.
Going back to that one just for a second.
Yeah.
Was there any comments where you were kind of like, did it make you second guess doing that thing a little bit, or I should have just used a hammer? Like, why did I bring out this little tool and do it? Was there any like
the only thing that kind of I thought about when it's because there was several comments that the tack strip was too far away from the baseboard.
Okay.
Because I know I've had that before, like depending on where, you know, how thick the carpet is, where the tack strip is put, and you can actually step on it and feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can't feel tack strip anywhere in our basement. It's been years now. We don't notice it at all. So the carpet is plenty thick enough. The carpet installer was super happy. I did it, put it where he wanted it to be put.
Yeah.
Mm. So I was like, maybe it could have been a little bit closer to the wall. That's the only thing that I was like.
Is there a comment on this one where somebody was like, that's silly. Why don't you just use this tool? It's amazing.
So many. Guys, like, there is this like baseboard gun, or use this kind of gun, like all these, like, just go buy this. Like, I don't need to go buy some specialty tool to do one job.
But still, that's helpful.
Those are, again, for people to read through the comments and be aware that there is a dedicated tool to do this. I mean, one guy was like, the only right way to do this is to drill pilot holes and use aluminum nails.
Whoa.
Like what? Never heard of that before.
No.
Okay, if that's your jam. Huh. And then people sending me pictures of different tools to do this sort of work. And so, yeah, people aren't like, again, if it's helpful, great. If it's not, scroll on or offer some other suggestion. But it's just said like, that's stupid, that's wrong. This is the tool, you just go buy it from this place. So easy. This is so dumb. What a waste of time. Thanks for sharing such garbage.
Yeah. And I mean, if I was a carpet installer and, you know, I've been doing it for 30 years and I'm seeing you put it in a way that I would never put it in, I would, if I'm not paying attention to the context, I probably would say some dumb comment, trying to make myself feel good. Mm-hmm. And be like, you hack, you don't know what you're doing, obviously. Mm-hmm. But if I'm actual me, who's installed carpet maybe three times, having somebody go, I use this tool, I'd be like, hey, wait a minute, maybe I can rent that tool next time I go to lay carpet. I hate laying carpet, and maybe I want that tool so I don't have to do something difficult.
Yeah.
So that's somewhat helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and to some degree too, like all my posts are put up there, like take it or leave it.
Yeah.
If it's helpful and it gives you more knowledge of their option, great. Right. So I'm not so naive to think that, you know, people should just be on my side and give me a high five all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's in the way that people discuss those things that I'm kind of like, come on, people, let's do this social media thing together and have communication, have some discussion. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this one is one that I've fully expected some backlash on. And again, I just kept it brief and short. So this is a post where I just showed pulling a nail with a nail puller. So one on the job site, one thing that drove me nuts is when guys would take their nail puller to pull a nail, and we're framing, rough framing. We're not worried too much about making some rosebuds and gouging the lumber a little bit. Like, it's, you be quick. That's the deal. So if you got to pull a nail out, you take your nail puller and the stubby end, you give that a few shots and you can yank the nail out. You can use the other end first to be a little bit more precise under the nail, and then flip it around, use your hammer, take more steps. But in framing, it's like you get the nail out fast. That's priority number one. So I just showed two options of pulling the nail out. So I had basically a couple 2x10s, drove a couple spikes in. The first one, I took my nail puller and I drove it way deeper than is necessary and busted out this big piece of wood, pulled the nail out. Totally overkill. And then I did a second option where with two swats, just pop, pop, nails out, gone, done. Really quick and didn't make nearly as much of a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Just simple. Now, I knew when I posted this, because of the nail puller I chose to use, which is the one that we sell, this is not the most precise tool for this job.
Mm-hmm.
So we sell the Boss nail puller, and the end that I like to use, it doesn't have sharp points on its end. They're somewhat blunt. It's part of the design of that nail puller. It's got lots of other good features, but for this particular function, it absolutely does the job for framing terms, but it takes a bit of a deeper gouge and it's not as precise a tool. There are other ones that work a bit better. But as far as what I'm trying to show in the video about, make as little damage as you need to and be quick about it. This is all you need to do. So the second one did take a bit of a chip out. but was, I would say, 90% better than the first one. So with that in mind, you guys can start reading through some of these comments.
Okay, I'll go first. First off, don't trust anyone who carries their tape in the front.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with anything.
And this happens all the time.
Front bagger, is that right?
Yeah, I was wearing a front bag.
Yeah.
And that's what they chose to comment on. So I get comments in regards to everything I wear, hold, carry all the time.
Yeah.
Completely unrelated to the actual topic that we're actually addressing.
Right. Because front baggers are rancid, terrible people.
Yep.
Or, just a thought, don't be lazy and use screws. Because nails are about being lazy. Yep. Is that the implication?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and there was multiple comments about if you're going to have to take it out, you use a screw. I'm like, this is nothing to do. So good carpenters screw everything, don't nail stuff?
Do they not know a nail bar exists? Like, there's a tool for removing nails because you have to remove so many nails in the job that they made a tool to remove the nails.
Yeah.
Instead of just going, oh, I know. Let's just use screws all the time.
There's a good number of comments that people think no carpenter should carry a nail puller. That means you're a shitty carpenter. If you have to carry a tool that's meant for pulling out nails, you must be a terrible carpenter.
Okay.
Just put it where it was supposed to be in the first place. You don't have to pull nails. Okay. Tons of comments like that. Like, have you ever actually framed anything?
Yeah.
Like, we use that thing all the time. It's a pry bar. It's a lever for things. It's for pulling nails. It's for all. We use it. Like, that's a must. That's a must in your tool belt as a framer.
Absolutely. I mean, especially if you're going to be, like, fast and efficient, you know, for so many different reasons, you know, like having that in there. Because again, when this person that doesn't carry one makes a mistake, like what, well, just if it totally bends over, just like hammer it down in the U shape. And
well,
just
never mind,
like,
making a mistake. It's not about a mistake, Brad. It's you shoot. Okay, I guess you can't use air nailers because, oh, I just happened to shoot the nail. It hits a knot. It curves around and it takes a chunk out of the stud. So I'm going to remove that.
Yeah.
So when someone goes to do the insulation, they don't cut their finger apart. So I'm going to pull it out because I'm a kind human. But wait a minute. I'm a shitty carpenter. I can't use my nail bar. I forgot. I didn't bring it this time. Yeah. So now it's what?
Angle grinder? Like, what?
Okay. Part three. Here we go. Nail pullers are for people who mess up all the time. Best thing you can do is chuck it in the garbage and get yourself a wedge.
A wedge?
A wedge.
So,
okay, so a wedge.
What do you mean?
So what people will do, I've seen lots of videos who promote this. So if you've got like a 3-ply post, you've got nailed together for some reason, you got to pull it apart. A lot of guys are like, oh, I use a wedge. They cut a long wedge. I've got a few of them and they drive wedges between the plies to push the plies apart.
Okay. Like,
okay, sure. That's an option to get 2 plies apart. Has nothing to do with the video that I was doing. Had nothing to do with it at all. And I actually give a fair bit of pushback on the whole wedge thing because if you use your nail puller and your hammer correctly, they're a lever and a wedge on their own. And I'll probably do a post about that, pulling a 2-ply apart.
Of course.
If you drive the two in properly and work them against each other, you do the same thing with the tools that you're carrying versus I'm going to go find a skill saw, I'm going to cut some wedges, I'm going to carry them back here, I'm going to drive them in.
Okay, I can see how this plays out.
Okay, but how, I don't understand.
I can see how
maybe I'm not understanding properly, but let's say you use the wedge, you do that, do you still have to pull out nails?
Yes.
But you'd have the plies apart. You could back them out from the other side and then pull them out from the front. So it's like all these extra steps.
Oh my goodness.
And so when we're framing and Brad's like, hey, just a second, fellas. He wanders off and we're thinking, what the, where we need to stand this wall.
I'm coming.
Just a second. Coming. One more wedge. And then tink, 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 tink. Shit. It broke the wedge. Hold on a second.
I'll be there.
Oh, so many issues. Again,
what a joke. Like
the wedges, it's an option that some guys prefer. Okay, if it's really stubborn, but I almost guarantee you 9 times out of 10, with my hammer and nail puller, I will have that done 10 times quicker than going to get wedges and drive these things in.
I could see carrying some pre-made wedges that are really good wedges in a situation where I was really careful about not wanting to remove any material. Like mm-hmm. I'm really mm-hmm. wanting to care for the surface. Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But when you're framing,
yeah.
which again is the context for your posts, yep. is you're a framer.
Yep.
So when doing this type of work, I use this tool. Here's how a tip on how to use this tool. But people look at that and they apply their entire context
yep.
to the comment. So yep. the next one is me, Brad. I'm yeah, next.
You're up.
Try that with a nail gun. LOL. You barely sank that nail. Everyone with a tool belt and tape measure thinks they're a carpenter.
So it's funny because when I did the post, I actually was like, I made sure to fully bury the nail. And there's actually a rosebud around each of the nails. So they're mm-hmm. fully buried. And there was comments about how the nail was still sticking up. You completely cheated. That wasn't a real test. Yeah. And then all the stuff that people talk about, how you're clearly not an actual tradesperson. You've actually never been on a job site before. You've never actually fill in the blank.
And okay. So if they, let's follow that train of thought. So I look at your action here on Instagram, social media, I'm sitting on the can watching you and I see you do the nail bar thing. And I'm thinking to myself, what a hack. This guy's clearly not a carpenter. So I come up with my clever comment. And what's the goal? That I disclose the secret that Luke isn't actually a carpenter, that he's a total fraud and just pretends. And I'm just going to be this praised for my efforts to unveil to the world the secret that you've been keeping.
I think they might actually think that though. Like they're sitting there on the can, they finish up the paperwork, they walk away feeling better about themselves.
Yes. It's like, a combination. The dopamine from yeah, dropping.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the comment at the same yeah. time. You do it together. Yeah. Ah, yeah. I feel amazing.
Right? Like
yeah.
I mean, again, and again, and how often, like even us as flawed humans, we'll say something like that in our anger or in our frustration mm-hmm. to somebody else and think that we, when we walk away, we've been like, well, you're an idiot. I walk by, been, you know, and I feel so much better about myself. So it's the same thing.
It is. We want to feel better. We're insecure.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Brad.
Okay, what do we got here? All the gear and no idea. That's good too. All the gear and no idea.
All the gear and no idea.
Okay, okay, okay. That was a short one. I get to do two. You just destroyed that wood. My apprentice is better than you. Again.
Awesome.
Again, it's just, I mean, again, if it was finishing, I understand it. Like, I get it. In a finishing thing.
Even if his apprentice is better.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for letting me know.
Thanks.
Is he available?
To hire?
We'll fly him out.
We'll fly him out. Okay. Don't be this guy. Make better life choices. Don't be this guy. Make better life choices. And so you can support your family at 45 and older. What the hell?
Yeah. That's just a bash to tradespeople in general. Like, just don't be a tradesman.
Don't be.
Because you'll be broke and, you know, financially and physically by the time you're 45 and useless to your family.
Instead, hang out on YouTube and watch these videos and make comments.
Don't be this guy. Oh my God.
So to be fair, I'll play devil's advocate against myself a little bit. Okay. In the video, I said, don't be this guy as I like gouge this huge piece out.
That's okay. True.
And then I do another one. And then okay. Of course there's so many comments.
So it's about, actually kind of witty actually.
It is a little bit.
Okay. That's a little better.
Yeah. That's a little better. Okay.
And don't so be this guy. And I, like I said, the second one wasn't like, it was as good a pull as I could do with that nail puller because it does make a little bit of a gouge. And so guys were like, yeah, don't be this guy. Be the other guy who made just as much a mess the second time. You know, it was like, those mm-hmm. were like numerous, those comments.
Yeah. Hmm. Don't be this guy. Okay. Last one on this one. You can tell he don't know what he's doing. Who uses bags that way, rookies?
That way, rookies. So it's because I got the front bag on.
Oh, okay. I get
But okay, I'm going to say this. And so we're chatting and I'm going to talk like this. You can tell he don't know what he's doing who uses bags that way, rookies.
Okay. It made me feel bad. I was waiting to get like half of my reading.
You would
look
at me. Do you need to go to the hospital?
Or? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Well, okay. That's a tough one. Awesome. So again, it's just like, you know, you get just trashed and insulted because of the way that you wear your tool belt.
Right. But I do appreciate that you, again, the lesson here, fellas, is context. So each one of these commenters has a context that if they could defend themselves, I'm sure you could, at the very minimum, slide over a little bit to understand a little bit more why they would say what they said.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the funny thing is, like, I engage most of these comments.
Yeah.
And I try to do it professionally and respectfully.
Yep.
And give benefit of the doubt. I'm like, okay, you're totally entitled to your opinion. That's fine. Here's the context. And then they usually lean in all the harder and are just that much more ruthless. And then they're like, oh, okay. I just laugh and stop commenting.
Yeah.
Because I read almost all the comments and respond to the vast majority, whether it's something as simple as just like liking their response or a simple reaction. It's not till weeks later that I stop actually going into these ones. Sometimes it go viral and there's like, you know, millions of views and, you know, hundreds and hundreds of comments. It's like, okay, I got to move on.
I kind of picture it this way. You're up on a roof. We're up there framing away. Some guy's walking his dog and he hollers up, "You could tell he don't know what he's doing who uses bags that way, rookies." And we all look and we say, "Just a minute." We all come down. We walk up to the guy with the dog and we say, "What was that? Could you expound?" In real life, does the guy with the dog just piss off because he's scared out of his mind that three humans want to actually engage his ridiculous nonsense? Mm-hmm. Or does he stand there and say it again and go even harder into it?
Sure.
If that person did that, it's likely they're on a substance or there's a mental health issue.
Right.
Because no human is going to be that ornery and ridiculous and that judgmental and critical without context. We all understand that.
Okay. Here's a little thing though. And not that this is, it's a little bit of a side story. I'm in the park in Summerland here with my dog.
Yep.
My dog's off leash. And this is a public park. You're supposed to have, there's even signs that say dog on leash. My dog, you guys know it. He's super chill. He's not whatever. He's really nice. And I'm in the park and I'm talking to a couple friends in the park. There's a couple guys with a dog. No, they didn't have a dog. Two guys having lunch. They're construction guys that are, and they were working on a building just across the street. And they're quite a ways away from me. And my dog ran up to my friend who also had a dog there off leash. And I hear in the distance, "Only a shitty dog owner would let their dog off leash." And I don't know these guys at all. And I'm like, I think maybe they're talking to me, but I can't really tell, like, I'm whatever. And then he says it again. And it's these two guys, and they're swearing and yelling at me across this park because my dog was off leash. And so I kind of feel right away a little bit like, you know, I should have actually had my dog on leash. And and these guys, they have a point. But the way they're talking to me is so inappropriate. And I'm just like, what the heck? And I know, I'm local. It's a small town. I know people. I know these guys aren't even from here. So I walk over, and it's not me like trying to like beat, but it came a second and third time, I'm
ready for fisticuffs. Yeah.
Well, so I just walk over there and I go to the picnic table and I'm like, okay, I understand that I don't have my dog on the leash and I put it on the leash at this time. And so fair enough. Like, I get that. You're right. There's a sign right there. I should have had my dog on it. But this whole thing of you calling me out, yelling across, you don't know me. You don't know my dog. You're obviously not from here. Like, I'm from here. I live here. And so this whole like yelling at me, there's no need for it. So I understand and you're right. And I like apologized. And the guy like is just looking at me. And it wasn't like he was like, oh, I want to fight. But he's like, you know what? Yeah, you're right. Yeah, sorry. I shouldn't have said that. And he stood up and shook my hand.
Well done.
And that was it. And I'm just like, hey, thanks a lot. Like, you know, and we went our separate ways and it was fine.
Yep.
But it's interesting. Like when you do approach someone that does have that and you know, and I'm not like, F you, I can do what I want. Like, you have a point. There's truth to what you have to say. Sorry for that. But let's treat each other with some respect. Like,
and in the social media world, that face-to-face interaction is removed.
Yes.
So people are safe to do whatever they want. Now, it oftentimes is the case, again, because the following is large and people aren't aware oftentimes that I'm the one actually monitoring all the comments, that when someone does say something outrageous and I comment back with some respect, like you do those guys, like, oh, no, so I didn't mean for it to come across like that. And they'll kind of tail between their legs and backpedal a little bit and then kind of soften their response. We have a discussion.
Yeah.
But more often than not, They just lean in all the harder and are that much more ruthless and terrible.
Right.
And you're like, oh, okay, this wouldn't happen if we were face to face, most likely.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And I have to consider that as a real option. And like, what's the best way to move forward and manage that, you know, in that reality?
Mm-hmm. It just feels like we want, like I'm thinking of that situation you described, and I've had situations like that. It seems like the insecurity, the ego, is wanting to protect. And so it projects power to control the situation and to dominate. And that just creates enemies versus in your situation where you went forward, mm-hmm. but you weren't just projecting power and control. You were projecting a sense of like, wait a minute, there's responsibility here. Let's talk about this in a, let's pursue a relationship sort of, not that you're going to be pals, mm-hmm. but in the sense that, hey, you're a human, I'm a human. Mm-hmm. We don't need to be enemies here. Yeah. And the person recognized it and showed incredible humility in kind of going, you're right. Mm-hmm. I apologize.
Yeah.
And that suddenly you could be like, hey, you know, we just resolved a conflict here in the park.
Yeah.
That could have been.
Yeah.
If you were a little bit more sour, had a bit more crap going on in your life, could very well have gone over there and just punched him in the mouth.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, a total stretch to imagine somebody doing that. But it just seems like the ego, once we let it get in the way to try and attempt in our insecurity to get power, mm-hmm. it just dehumanizes people.
Yeah.
Versus actually seeing them as a person.
Yeah.
And being able to be like, wait a minute, I'm gonna take a minute here and pursue something better. Something better
yeah.
than just hollering obscenities at people.
Next post. So board flip, I called this one. So this is one when I was working on the outside of the shop and cleaning up material beside the shop in my waste area. And there was a 2x4 that had nails in both ends. I'm like, oh, this is something I always love doing on the job site, which is when there's a piece of scrap on the ground with the nails in it, I'm going to pick it up by reaching out with my hammer, throw the claws into the end grain to lift it up. One shot to back the nail out, flip it around, pull the nail. And then I just use my hammer as a fulcrum to put the 2x4 on. I spin it to get the other end up, hit the nail, pull the nail out.
I started reading them.
The first one.
Pull the nail out, set it on the pile. So I'm like, this is something I just loved to do on the job site. Like both you and I, like we got into juggling and goofy little things and like having decent coordination and flipping things out. It just makes things fun.
Yeah.
And so in the description, I talk about this is a mundane, boring task, and there's ways you can find it enjoyable and more efficient. And here's one thing I love to do.
You're going to get so much flack for us, but like we were like into juggling and, you know, we almost joined the circus. We went pro with juggling the balls and thing. And then now it's really fun.
I shouldn't say that. We can both juggle.
Yes.
And that's about it.
Yep.
You know, we play hacky sack and different things. We've got decent hand-eye coordination.
There's another one. Now we juggle and we play hacky sack.
Yeah, there we go.
There's probably a lot of guys that...
sleight of hand, swallowing loonies.
Yes. Sleight of hand, swallowing. That's a lot. There's a lot there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but I know, I've seen you do that board flip and it always looks... It is. It's fun. Find the fulcrum, it flips around and it's just like... It's kind of like the pen tricks that we, you know, in school. It's the same thing.
Yeah, totally.
Dustin, why don't you read the first one because I can tell you just want to say the word pecker.
What's that little bag by his tiny pecker? Any carpenter that needs suspenders to hold up his bags is a wannabe.
I love how you added.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Folks, it actually says, what's that little bag by his pecker? You added little pecker just to embellish, which I really appreciate that actually. It made it way better. Little pecker.
Any carpenter that needs suspenders to hold up his bags is a wannabe.
Yeah.
That's actually really ignorant,
mm-hmm.
like really, really ignorant because somebody has back problems. Somebody happens to carry a lot of metal tools. Like how many hundreds of examples can we give mm-hmm. that suspenders are not only appropriate, but completely necessary?
Or at least a completely viable option. I mean, I wore my belt with and without suspenders for different tasks, different seasons.
Yeah.
You know, my body's feeling a certain way, my back hurts certain ways. Suspenders were like off and on depending on all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
So again, super ignorant thing to say.
Yeah, I've never worn suspenders, but I've never had that thought.
Never.
Of like, you know, that comment was probably from what's his name's apprentice from earlier on.
Yeah, it was.
Who's just so awesome. Okay, next one. Part-time carpenter, full-time cheerleader and baton twirler.
I like that one. That's
good. Yeah. See, that is, it's such a diss, but it's so outlandish. It's funny. Like I could take that and be like, that was a good diss.
I know. That's why I put it in here. Cause I'm like, I think that's hilarious.
I like it.
And there was other comments like, you know, show off. I'm like, sure. That's viable. I totally showed doing something a little fancy, mm-hmm. completely unnecessary, but it's fun.
Yeah.
And I mentioned the description. I'm just taking it lightly.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought that was a great comment.
It was clever.
Full-time cheerleader and baton twirler. That's so good.
That is good.
Hats off.
This next one has to be someone our age. Because I used to say this in grade 8. And when our teacher said it, we went, we're not saying this anymore because this is dumb now.
Yeah.
So this is kind of Wayne's World era. Wow, that was amazing. Not.
I was right back to the 90s when I read that one.
For sure.
I honestly haven't heard somebody say that since high school.
Yeah.
Next one. Yeah, he's a real carpenter. Wears shorts. A real man wears pants. Jeez, that's awesome. Oh boy.
Anytime I do anything wearing shorts and tools, there's a bunch of like union guys and people are like, you're clearly not legit because you cannot wear shorts.
You're not allowed. Fair enough.
In certain areas, like here in our area, because it gets so hot, mm-hmm. there's certain sites and commercial sites where it's like a company policy that they can't wear shorts, but mm-hmm. we had full permission through WCB here to wear shorts because it gets mm-hmm. so hot. Mm-hmm. Again, whatever your situation is where you're at, fine. But again, the diss for apparel, I'm like, wow.
So does that mean every construction worker that works on the equator is a wannabe, not a real man, because they don't wear pants?
Yep. That's what it means.
Yeah, that's a dumb one. I mean, again, for me, I obviously can tell I wear shorts all the time, but obviously not a real man. I did pretty much build my entire house in flip-flops and shorts.
What happens if you wear a kilt? I feel like the man.
That is, oh man.
Wait, that goes higher.
Super high.
Yeah. Like build your whole house in a kilt?
Yeah. Ooh. Who's going to comment that?
A real man.
This should say, he's a real carpenter, wears shorts. A real man wears
a kilt.
A kilt.
That'd be good.
Yeah. And we all know that if you wear a kilt, you're not wearing anything else.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah. The last one, pick up your effing nails. I can actually hear the guy on the site yelling this. I'd fire you on the spot if you did that on my site.
Yep. So there was so many of those comments. Nothing seen as positive in the post at all. Simply criticism as to, you know, you're going to be hitting, you're going to be popping everybody's tires, you're going to be hitting with your lawnmower, you know, animals are going to get wounded.
Lawnmower.
Like all these things. Yeah, all these things about dropping nails on the ground. And so I've responded to several. I'm like, this is the waste area on my own shop, on my property. This is the spot for it. And people are talking about how you never, ever leave nails on the ground. I'm like, have you guys ever framed before? Like, okay, here's the reality of like production framing. Overbuilding piles up there. When you're done putting a floor on and you strip braces and you're pulling railings down, there's nails everywhere, all over the place. You're sweeping up nails, piles of nails. Mm-hmm. You're stripping stuff outside after prefabbing roof sections. There's nails all over the ground. Now, that to be fair, we were very strategic with where those nails would end up, never on the driveway, in places where there was going to be like backfill done. Like you're strategic about it.
Mm-hmm.
And some guys do have the magnetic rollers. You can go around and pick stuff up. Mm-hmm. But like the amount of backlash that I got for nails thrown onto the ground, I was like, people.
Well, that's like expecting roofers to not drop nails.
Exactly.
And you always have a guy going around with the magnet picking up nails.
Yeah. So again, it was just countless comments where people were just ragging on me for dropping nails on the ground. And you respond to a couple. Mm-hmm. People don't read those comments. Yeah. They just post. And if that post was viral, which was what this one was, it just comes around and around. And I'm like, you know what? I'm done responding to that comment.
Yeah. It does make you wonder a little bit if there was multiple comments on that. You know, is there some place or some way or some other talent that they have of picking up the nails or where they're not losing? Because again, if there's multiple people there, I'm curious, what is there another option where when you're stripping forms or you're doing this stuff that you're not losing nails everywhere? Like, is there?
I think it's just a naive... The most part, it's coming from people that aren't aware of what how construction actually takes place.
Yeah.
And they're seeing nails on the ground, which typically isn't a good thing.
For sure.
And maybe they've hit a few nails in their with their lawnmower, you know, from someone who has been careless and put nails where they shouldn't have been. Like, there's it's a point worth talking about. Yeah. But again, I'm just always shocked with the blatant judgment and like no question, no discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's shocking. Mm. Okay. That's a fun one. Okay. Next one. This is a little more of a general one and there's way more I could have grabbed out of this. So I do several tool belt demo videos where I'm like, I put on whatever tool belt and I show how to load it up and what tools go in it and why I've designed it a certain way and tell the bags and the setup of it. And these are a few comments that people have given from those simply just demo posts of a tool belt.
So you're modeling the tool belt. You got tools in it. This talking is where stuff it. Goes.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. First one. Obviously, never spent a day on a job site before.
Yep. All the time. That's so common. Where people just like you obviously have no clue whether it's like. No carpenter would ever carry that many tools. And it's like my basic minimalistic everyday carry. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you talking about? Or I'm like, this was like loaded to capacity, which I talked about in the description to show the capacity of it. If right. you need to carry this yeah. much stuff. Other guys are like, no carpenter actually even wears a tool belt. All you need is a hammer. Like all these bizarre, naive comments,
which
so many.
Everybody in their right mind can appreciate that carpentry in one part of the world can look completely different in another part of the world. Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Like I was just watching a video about Japanese framing and just the art form that it is mm-hmm. of bringing joints together and not using any fasteners. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, centuries old. So whatever that carpenter is using for tools is going to be different than what I'm going to use. Mm-hmm. So instead of curiosity, not a carpenter. Yep.
I mean, I remember, maybe we need to start selling these, is remember those pants that had the hammer holder on them, right? I remember having a pair of jeans when I was a kid that had the little thing there. And I remember going down into dad's shop, grabbing a hammer, just putting it in there because I felt so badass.
Yeah.
Having my little hammer there. That's a real carpenter. Just carry that. That's, you know, there's pants made for real carpenters.
Are they painter's pants and that's for a paintbrush?
Hammers, man.
Hammer pants.
Oh. Hey. Oh.
Okay, next one. What's the point of having a nice bag set up when you have a child's drill from a playset?
What drill did you have?
What am I, DeWalt? I think my 12 volt.
You should put a kid's toy in there.
Yeah. So and don't say anything.
No.
Just totally as if it's a normal thing. Like a little plastic. One of
those squeaky hammers. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. See what kind of comments you get.
Yep. So when you're wanting to bury the nails real deep, you're going to want to take a good solid swing with this 15 ounce. And then, I think you should actually. Next one, Brad.
Well, before you go into it, I just want to speak to that one. I get so much crap for whatever tools are in the background, what I'm demoing, like, has nothing to do with the post. Like, if you're a DeWalt guy, you're a Makita guy, you're a Milwaukee, whatever.
Yeah.
They will all do the job. Mm-hmm. Some better than others. You have your preference, your platform, who cares?
But admittedly, I think, especially social media and influencer culture has kind of wrecked stuff in a lot of ways. Mm. So what I mean is, say you were sponsored by DeWalt, which you aren't, but when you have money coming at you to now suddenly use your influencer powers to tell everyone that this such and such a tool is the best one, now people are like, yeah, okay, good one. Mm-hmm. You're just going to use a totally unreasonable tool that you're just only suggesting it because you get paid to.
Right.
So we kind of shoot ourselves in the foot by having this kind of setting where people get suspicious. Especially when you have a big following, they're suspicious. So whatever relationship you happen to have with whatever brand and you genuinely enjoy it and you love it and you'd buy it, but you happen to have a collaboration going on, we don't trust it.
Yeah.
Because like, oh, you're just making money. Everybody's just making money.
Mm-hmm. And I have no paid collaborations with any company. Mm-hmm. None. So
there you go.
Back off.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Back off.
Next one. Way too pricey.
Yeah, all stretched out in all caps.
Way too pricey.
Yeah, so again, ones like this, I'm like, okay, you build it. Mm-hmm. You get the equipment, the leather, do the research, you build it.
Yeah.
And don't source it out to overseas. Don't use garbage material that's like bonded leather. Like, if you don't know what you're talking about, you know, don't say it. Go hire
some families. Go hire like men and women that have children and families and have own houses and cars and put their kids in school and then tell us how much this belt should be.
Yeah. And that's price is something I'm super picky about because like I haven't adjusted the prices for 5 years since we started. I haven't changed any prices and I set them by the cost that we need to kind of keep growing and moving forward. And in relation to the other manufacturers that are of similar quality and price point wise, we're like, everyone's kind of very consistent across the board, very comparable when you compare apples to apples. Some of our sets get expensive when you add all the accessories and parts, you can keep adding stuff and it gets to be expensive. But if you compare apples to apples, they're very competitive with the other, you know, five kind of top end manufacturers.
They make sense. I always love this practice. It probably has a really smart name. I wish I had one for it. But let's just do it a little, and I won't take too long, but just the concept of like, this is too much money. Fair enough. You're just looking at the price tag and you're saying, I don't know, you're comparing it to buying a belt from Home Depot or something. Like Brad was alluding to, you got employees, though employees got families. But have you ever done the mental practice of holding something in your hand? So let's just take something simple like this piece of paper. How many human lives and stories have touched this before it got to my hands? Who are the guys maybe planting the tree that grew, right? And then was harvested and then went through the mill. I worked in a lumber mill. You know, thinking about the hands of the people, all those stories and all those layers of human beings and human existence and costs and food and all water, the cow that had to be cared for to become the leather that you're now wearing. Where is that cow from? Who's the guy who's taking care of that cow? Feeding the cow, all the layers of stories, and you come to this situation and you go, wait a minute. Somebody's put all of their creativity and thought and their experience of all these years of work, and they've acquired all of these resources and humans to build a product for me to enjoy, to make my life and my work better. And I'm coming up to it and I'm seeing, oh, wow, this is legitimate. Here's the price tag. You either pay the price and appreciate it, or you don't. And the moment you decide to take a second to appreciate it, you either find that it's not worth it, or you go, wow, this is amazing. And the people that come through the door, person after person after person, comes in and goes, wow, I can't believe I'm getting this. You should charge more. Because when you choose to look for value, you're going to find it. If you choose to look for nonsense, you're going to find it. So thanks for the nonsense. What's the next one? This guy probably never has had to wear bags all day long.
Yeah. Again, those are dime a dozen, those comments.
Next one.
And I just get tired.
Yeah.
Just get tired telling people, like, I spent 25 years building and built, you know, nearly 400 homes and spent 4 years just building walls. Like I've done it a bit.
Yeah. Nothing like carrying your entire tool collection on you like you're about to parachute behind enemy lines with a emoji face, rolling eyes.
That's a good one. That's thoughtful.
Yeah.
Because actually, if you watch Band of Brothers, they parachute in and land with nothing. So because they lost the bag that's supposed to have all their stuff in it.
Right.
So your sense doesn't really work because...
Yeah, and those are on posts with my everyday carry for forming and framing.
That's crazy that yeah.
Like a lot of guys carry so much more.
Yeah.
Like I'm really minimalistic.
Yeah.
And you get those like, kind of work do you... What do you...
And then hence the suspenders. And when you do have that stuff too, like take the load off. Like,
so you're saying your entire tool collection consists of chalk line, tape measure, hammer, nail bar, some fasteners,
pencil, speed square.
So your garage all of the stuff that you have in your garage fits in your tool belt.
Wow.
Okay. Only noobs use tool belts for real.
So you read those and you're like, yeah, okay.
Only noobs use skateboards at the skate park.
Yeah, totally.
Only noobs. You're such a noob. So I'm just going to go in the skate park and pretend and run around and like kickflip. And everybody's like, whoa, he doesn't even need a skateboard. That's so good.
People seriously waste their time filming this BS. Dude, no one fucking cares.
You obviously care. You're watching it.
He's watching it. Why are you here?
Why are you?
So lots of comments about that. Like, you know, so I'm just imagining you setting up this scene to take this, you know, film. You could have got so much work done in the time to do this filming. I'm like, you do realize we build and sell tool belts.
That's the only thing that makes any sense. They've just been watching National Geographic, tigers, lions eating things, and they're super into it, and they're watching science, and this is how atoms are split, nuclear bombs, and then they get to some guy in a tool belt. I'm like, what the? Why are you filming this? This is stupid. Yeah. I don't care about tool belts. Why would you even bother?
Yeah. So that's where I'm shocked. I'm like, just look into the feed a little bit, realize that we build and sell tool belts. We are carpenters of many years. We sell tools. This completely makes sense.
Yeah. And the fact that he says, dude, no one effing cares. And yet there's 100,000 subscribing people that are watching this stuff all the time. No one cares though.
Well, it's like you and I walking down Main Street. We go in to Gigi's and get our
gelato.
And then we go into the next store and go, who cares? No one cares about your store. Next one, buy something, totally. Knock on the window. Nobody cares. It just would be horrible. No one wants to be that kind of person.
Jeez.
Okay. What's in that last one here?
Last one. I called this one circular saw foot clamp. And this is a post that I did where oftentimes at a job site, you're again, it's speed is of a... Times of the speeds of the, what am I trying to say? You're trying to be quick.
I think you're trying to say time is of the essence.
That's the, yep.
So but you're trying you to be fast. You got all turned around when you said speeds of the timing.
Speeds of the timing.
Quickness of the essence.
Okay, Tiana, my wife, who's going to watch this. This is ammo for her because I make fun of her all the time for screwing up her sayings.
She doesn't screw up the sayings. She makes them up.
She does both.
Okay.
She gets halfway and then she just tries to finish them. So anyway, on the job site, you're always trying to be quick and you're trying to make do with the tools that are at hand. So for instance, going to grab a table saw, oftentimes you need to cut 1 2-foot block, rip it in half. You're like, there's no point. I got a skill saw right here. The saw horses are outside. I can make this happen right here. So what I did, I was a couple of things. I was dressed in street clothes. I was working in the shop, but I had to throw my tool belt on to do some little demo edition, fix a bench. Threw my tool belt on. So I got my Nikes on.
Oh yeah, this.
Tool belt on, yeah, need a short block. I'm like, oh, this is kind of helpful. My table saw is tucked away. I'm like, I got the skills out. I'm gonna rip this block in half. So I put it on the floor. I've got two pieces of scrap and I make a little teeter totter, stand on one end and I grab the shoe of the saw so I can use my finger fence so I can rip 1¾".
Finger fence is a good
one. Yeah, so I rip halfway down and then I grab the whole thing. I transfer to the other side, step on the back of it and got two hands on the saw, super stable, and I move forward to finish the rip. So I've cut this 2-foot block into 2¾ wide-ish pieces.
Yeah.
With my skill saw, without horses, without a table, without clamps, without a table saw. And I've done it, to me, what is safe and quick.
And it doesn't have to be precise for the application. It doesn't have to be
perfect. Yep. And I even mentioned it right up in the description. I'm like, now, and I said right in the post, I put like, not for newbies. Like, if you have not handled a skill saw much, the one thing that is potentially risky here is that if it were to ever bind, you could run back onto a four and you'd hit your foot with the saw blade. Now, I've got both hands on that saw and the chance of that thing binding enough that it's going to pull out of my hands and run back down the board, could it happen? Sure, that is a risk. Now, as a framer using spikers and skill saws, we use dangerous tools all the time. Table saw, hands down, most dangerous tool in a shop. Mm-hmm. Spikers. They're super dangerous. Mm-hmm. So here is calculated risk being used by someone who's been with tools a ton. And I'm like, here's an option to cut a block in half that's quick, it's quite safe, and it doesn't mean you need to go find your table saw and do an elaborate setup. This can be done quickly.
And admittedly, it's not ideal.
No.
And you're wearing your Nikes.
Wearing my Nikes, yeah.
Because again, if there was a slip up, you know, even you could see how people being like, well, look how close he is to his feet and he's not wearing proper footwear and blah, blah, blah.
Valid?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Go.
Dustin, why don't you take the first one?
Never worked on a site in his life. Way too clean for my liking. What do you mean my liking? Like, you're way too clean for
me
my
to respect
liking.
You should be a little bit dirty and showing that you've actually been doing some work.
Brad. Your shorts are too short for my liking.
Well, look a little closer. I'm curious, like way too clean for my liking. Like as in you look too clean.
Yeah, I didn't
like,
have sawdust or dirt all over dirty. Me. I wasn't filthy because I hadn't been stripping forms all morning.
All right. Next one. How can you possibly use DeWalt tools? No thanks.
Again, just like bashing because the tools they use. I'm a DeWalt guy. I'm not sponsored by them, but I've always loved their tools. Mm-hmm. Are there some tools from other manufacturers that maybe are superior? Perhaps. But I want one platform that's consistent so I can do maintenance on them and the same battery platforms, all that. Overall, I've been happy with running DeWalt for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with it. And I don't have four different platforms of lines. I've tried other ones from time to time, had issues with the other main brand names and come back. Like, mm-hmm. I'm okay with it.
Yeah. I remember you did have the one Bosch with the truss hook on it. Beer. Yeah. Oh, it killed you there.
Totally got me.
We get beers after?
Thanks, buying.
Yes. Next one?
Yep.
Are wearing a yoga costume?
Are wearing a costume?
Hey, for starters, no one calls it a costume. Like, if you're going to do yoga... You're not like, man, nice costume.
Buddy. No, but there's a place. I can't remember if it's Australia. There is a place where I want to say it was even like a costume. Is it swimwear? I can't remember what it is.
So, and admittedly, okay, so I've got like work clothes and I've got kind of more street clothes. And I like sometimes athletic wear and I'll wear like skinny jeans or I'll wear whatever. So it's just that day I was wearing pants that were a little bit fitted. And like maybe this t-shirt or a black t-shirt. And so, I was.
Did you do any yoga that morning? You do a little bit. Do you do a little yoga?
I might have actually done. Well, I don't do official yoga. I do have a stretching routine in the morning.
So maybe this was.
He touches his toes and calls it.
Maybe this was a smart comment. Maybe they're like, hey, were you doing yoga?
Yeah,
probably. Or maybe it's an encouragement. You look really fit.
Yeah.
You look at rest.
Yeah.
You look stretched out.
That's right. Yeah, it would have been nice if there was a little yoga mat underneath his block of wood. He just sits there. This is how you.
This is downward nice. Dog.
Mm. Yes. Okay. They have this device called a table saw.
Thanks.
Okay, that one made me think. It's kind of like looking at a history book and just looking at a photo, and then saying, "There, that's what happened." Not reading anything.
Yep.
You just look at a photo, a famous photo of some situation, and you're like, "That's dumb. Why'd they do it like that?"
Hmm.
Oh, but I didn't read about, let me see, 1,000 years of history and all these people and these relationships and these governments and this happened, which led to this photo. Read the thing.
Yeah, I think there's audio and text that says, you know, sawhorses and a table saw isn't always readily available. Here's an option to do it with the skill saw, the tools you have on hand. Like, that's exactly what it was about.
And
the fact that if you don't have one handy, here's an option.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is a bit of a sideline. We'll get back to these comments, but... Speaking of table saw, what were the comments that you got when you flipped the table saw? I want to say upside down and cut through a bunch of, like, again, super fun and whatever. But what was the response on that? Did they take it seriously or what was the thing?
Yeah, that was a fun one because that I originally did that. That's like 5-6 years ago.
So explain what you actually did.
So it's 5 or 6 years ago. I was on a job site in Penticton. It was early in the morning. I was about to start sheeting some walls. I had my crews working at other houses. I'm like, I'll go over here and sheet. So it's early morning. It was this crisp morning. I hadn't been on social media very long. And I had this epiphany. I'm like, I got to cut these 1 foot strips for these 9 foot high walls. So you 1 foot strip down the center of the wall. And typically we'd either put the table saw on the ground and rip full sheets and along the fence and one at a time. And it's always awkward, like 4x8 sheets on a table saw by yourself. It's a pain in the butt. If you're going to do it on a stand, you can't even do it by yourself. You need a helper to do it. And I always liked doing it on a table saw because the sheets were deadly straight. Because you can obviously snap lines, use a skill saw to cut them. But then they're not oftentimes perfect, and that can mess the square of your wall up and all these different things. So that morning, I just had this epiphany. I'm like, what if I put the table saw upside down?
Yeah, and run it like a skill saw. This is like a light portable.
A little light Bosch 10-inch table saw. And I just like, I flipped it over. I'm like, it's got a whole shroud on it. The blade is completely enclosed. It's a gutless little thing. Blade is sharp. Like I can manhandle this thing. No problem. If I tack these sheets to you, I can cut like four at a time and this might work great. I'm like, I better record this. I threw my phone in the corner and I made a point to cut enough depth so that when I pulled those four sheets off the stack, I could do it again against the cut line and the fence would hang down into that, that void where they'd pull the sheets away.
Right.
So I strategically cut the right amount of sheets and it would just like push it across, flip it over, bring it back, do it again. And I cut, I think 5 or 6 sheets deep, 1 foot strips by myself in like a minute and a half. Mm-hmm. It worked so good. Mm-hmm. And so I posted, I said, okay, everybody, disclaimer right away. I do not recommend this. I had this crazy idea. I'm not saying to do this, but here's what I did. And it worked amazing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it went quite viral. And then within, you know, a few months, there's other guys who were doing it. It got shared around a bunch. So it's one of those things that you put out there like, this is not a recommended practice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is not how this is intended to be. This is like full
except
blown.
Except that the legs do feel like they were made for that. When you flip that table saw upside down and you have that handhold and you're just like, yeah. It's like a lawnmower. Yeah. You just,
well, that's what so these good. Legs are for.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was awesome. Maybe I'll repost that to my stories to bring up the old original post.
Okay, back to the circular saw foot clamp. Yeah, this is I think Dustin, you're up.
You can tell by this dude's shoes that he doesn't actually do any real work. Could have just as easily used the wood to the side as a makeshift sawhorse to get that board off the ground. Dude is a joke.
Yeah. Again, not reading, not considering the circumstances, not asking questions, all of that.
But why, like, why, what's going on in your life that you feel totally at liberty to say someone's a total joke? Like another person with kids, family, job, hard things going on in their life. Because you didn't do it the way I think you should do it, you're a joke.
Yep.
And that's the funny thing too, that, you know, people from the outside seem to look at it like, here's this guy who's just doing whatever he wants, make these tool belts, everything looks like gravy, and not considering the reality like, hey, no, I've got 4 kids. I've got a wife. I've got my own things that I'm working on, struggling through, running a business, working with employees, paying bills, trying to keep a social media presence that is valid and helpful and makes sense and promote a brand and build something. It's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And I'm a person the same as everybody else with their own struggles and things that you're working on. And so like comments like this, I'm like, you just don't think I'm a real person, you know, is kind of what it feels like.
It just feels like, to me, a choice to dehumanize in an effort to promote yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the same thing happens in like fight culture, right? So the big champ, whoever the new challenger is, they're just going to say the other person's an idiot in a lot of creative ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all it is just posturing to try and sell the fight. So in a sense, social media is just this breeding ground of all those insecurities and self-promotion to just dump everywhere. Yeah. And it makes it terrible unless we're poking fun at it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that's where I take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
I don't let it bother me.
What does that mean? Take it with a grain of salt. By the way, this is something the three of us do all the time. Someone says a thing and then someone goes, wait a minute.
Where does that come from?
And then if we don't know, we usually pull it out of our...
You're the best.
No, listen, I know. I actually.
It obviously comes from the you know, the cubes that the horses lick, and it's the.
You know, take it. Like, does it honestly mean with a grain? Take it with a grain of salt.
It has to have to do something with spice, flavor, or something like. Take it with
what it means. What you're saying is, I take it with a grain of salt means I'm not going to take it too seriously. Yes. Or what is that? What are you saying?
You take a grain of salt is like it doesn't bother you. It's not a big deal. So,
because I don't know, sometimes we say sayings and we think it means a thing, which it actually doesn't.
Well, it's funny because it's not even a grain. It's a mineral.
No, no.
That's so, a slow one right there.
So that's another heads up for you. Brad, most people try and pull fast ones. He pulls slow ones.
Oh, there's so, so much more fun.
Oh, he'll say the most asinine, stupid thing. And then you go to correct him. And he's baited you. I'm going to say something that makes me sound dumb. So you question me. And then we feel stupid for correcting him. He sits there and laughs at you.
It's good. Because they'll start to explain how stupid you are. And you just have to give them a little grin. And then they just stop in their tracks. And like, oh.
Why do I feel stupid because you said something dumb? Okay,
another one, though. On the subject, you said, could have easily used wood on the sides to make a makeshift.
It's not a good one.
Makeshift.
Right? Yeah. Oh, just little makeshift sawhorses there.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Oh, no.
I don't understand the shift part.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's some more comments that you can add to this to this post.
The last one on this one was learn how to hold a saw. Were you holding the saw in a funny way?
So many of these. I was like, people. So
makeshift. You're making one thing. This comes from back in the day when you had to be really resourceful. So you would make one thing, let's call it a cart. Okay, as I'm halfway through the cart, my resources are low, dog died, children have all died from starvation. Now I need to turn my cart into a plow, makeshift plow. Just made a few tweaks, now I've got a plow.
You shifted your design to make something
else. Shifted my design, makeshift. Oh. So it comes from about the 1300s, back when plowing and carts.
Good job, good job.
That's good, yeah. Well, now we know.
How you know?
So I get this comment about holding a saw on a regular basis. You're like, you're so stupid for holding the saw that way. You're going to cut your fingers off. And there's a handle right in the front you're supposed to be holding. What are you doing putting your fingers under the saw?
They don't know you're doing the guide.
So right?
Finger
you take
fence.
The finger fence. Yep. So you take, like, if Double this is F. the, if I've got the handle here and I want to make a rip cut, well, I can either put a line on my material and try and like keep that straight. Or you can turn your skill saw into your circuit saw into basically a table saw, and you can grab the shoe of the saw and you run the material along your finger and you can push a laser straight line. And so when people see that post, if they kind of have an idea what they're looking at, they're like, oh, this is a guy that's handled the saw a ton because he's doing something that makes that super controllable. So I actually, as I made the first part of the cut, I pushed the saw till halfway and then I let go with the left hand. Kept the board and the saw together, moved it over, put the saw down, stepped on it, grabbed the shoe again to keep in the same spot and pushed it through. So there was no adjustment, no wiggling of the blade, but I get all this criticism about why don't I use the handle that's right by my hand? And like an idiot, you stuck your fingers under the saw instead.
That's so dumb.
So many of those comments.
But that is honestly what I remember when I saw you do that. And then I started, once I figured out how to hold it, and it is so helpful. And so fast, and it skips so many steps.
But the first time you do it,
it's a little scary.
On a sheet of OSB, you take your finger out and you're like, and it's just
exactly
covered in splinters.
Covered in splinters.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that. And then the other one too that I remember watching you do was the taking the tape and doing the same thing, squaring with the tape.
Yeah.
And then I saw drywallers, some of the wicked drywallers. Martin, I remember seeing the first time do the thing, figures out the measurement and just cuts it. And I'm like,
one of my first bosses in Edmonton had been a drywaller previously, and that's how he would mark stuff. And again, drywallers it's like second nature.
Yeah.
It's so fast.
Yeah.
And so these guys who do it so well, and it takes some practice to keep your hands from getting all squirrely and doing things quickly also helps when you kind of get the method down, and it becomes a go-to option for guys. I've seen in months past, it seems goofy to me, but guys have actually, they've ripped with their skill saw and they stick their tape out of their hand, like 20 inches, butt their hand into the plywood and run the tab of the tape against the side of the saw and then do this kind of goofy fence thing. Like that's pushing it too far, in my opinion. Like there's too much potential for the tape to skip over the shoe and things go screwy, but it kind of works. Yeah.
But it's like a lot of those things that you do, the looser you hold, the better. I think when you're first doing a lot of stuff, it doesn't work well because you're so tense.
Yep.
But the guys that do it, it's like this effortless loose. And you can see someone with the tape if they were super good at it and they're holding things loose enough and they're not binding or whatever like that. Yeah. But that does seem a little bit,
yeah,
a bit odd.
So anyway, all of that to say, you know, those sort of techniques and tricks of the trade, you know, people just are critical without mm-hmm. asking a question. And instead of learning something, you know, they just are insulting instead. And again, like those times I'm like, I'll respond to that comment. I'm like, oh, this is why I'm using my finger as a fence. This is a common way to use this tool that does this, has this advantage. It's not unsafe actually at all. And I try to engage and give opportunity for discussion. So yeah, it's quite the journey. So there's the first kind of batch to go through, comments on comments. Curious how that came across to you guys. There's so many more. I mean, again, like it was a mix this morning of like having a chuckle reading through the lots of funny comments and lots of support, but it was also hard to read, you know, when you've got just like endless comments, it seems, of just criticism and not just like people posing questions with a bit of a strong opinion else in a different direction, like blatant insulting my humanity and, mm-hmm. and how stupid and naive and ridiculous I am. And I don't in any way, shape or form expect people to all come on board and have my same opinion. You're entitled to an opinion. Mm-hmm. Well, let's just talk about them. I mean, that's a huge life skill is like, I'm trying with my kids, for instance, I'm trying to prioritize teaching them how to think and not what to think. You know, if we can learn how to interact with one another and how to manage disagreements and different points of view, then we all get better for it. Mm-hmm. But if we sit back in our own little bubble with our narrow-minded perspective on things and say that anyone who falls outside that is an idiot, like how self-righteous and insecure is that? So mm-hmm. anyway, I look forward to upcoming comments and maybe there's going to be, we were talking about this earlier, maybe there's going to be an attempt from some people in the audience. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to have my comment be talked about. So maybe there's going to be some outrageous ones coming.
We get some good emails too. There's some doozies there. But we do save the ones that are super encouraging. Because mm-hmm. I've got in my email list, I've got a little folder that's all, you know, people's meaningful comments that they take a minute to say, mm-hmm. you know what? I can't wait to go to work today with my new belt. It makes my day better. Thank you for all you do for all of us out on the work site. Like those types of comments. And people that call in and, you know, they have questions. Because some people email and email's tough, right? You know, sending it, putting a little comment in social media, there's no context. It's almost like so difficult to get your point across. But to talk to people on the phone and to hear how excited they are, to hear how much they appreciate it, the surprise that people have of like, man, so much thought has gone into this. So that type of encouragement goes such a long way and really does when you contrast it to these comments. Yeah. You're like,
yeah. Well, the email is kind of almost like the new handwritten letter because it's like a little bit more personal. And so if you have a bunch, I know I get a lot of actual handwritten letters about the belts that I make. So,
oh my God.
But I mean, email is pretty good too, I guess.
Actually,
I have a literal folder and a file drawer that I keep all my handwritten letters in.
Thank you, Brad.
Yeah.
I loved how you sewed this together for me. Yeah. My family has appreciated it for months. And we wanted to take this time. And here's my cologne on the letter.
Yep.
And here's the drawing my daughter did.
Yours sincerely.
Since yours truly, Engelbert Humperdinck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great. And to be fair too, like the positive comments typically far outweigh the negative ones. So this is in no way, shape or form a pity party and pleading with you guys to be kinder. We can't handle it. It's all part of what comes with the territory and it's all part of it, but it's fun to talk through. It's great. Thank you, gentlemen, for being assholes this morning.
Hey, you're welcome.
Pleasure.
It was great. That was super fun. Hope that was enjoyable to listen to and we'll do it again before long. Thanks for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.